Are you ready for an event unlike any other? Straight Talk Podcast and America's Sheriff David Clark present the first ever Badge of Honor Cruise. Sail on Royal Caribbean's Adventure of the Seas from December 7th to 13th for a week that celebrates police bravery and honor. This is not just an event. It's a movement to show support for law enforcement excellence. Join us for networking, podcast sessions, and a black tie gala where courage and honor are not just recognized, but celebrated. The event will feature other distinguished speakers and celebrities, such as Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Tom Homan, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. Reservations are open for cruise cabins and event badges, including General, VIP, and Partner badges. We're also calling for nominations for officers who've shown exceptional service. Visit badgeofhonorcruise.com to reserve your badge level, book a room, and nominate a hero. Join us in celebrating our men and women in blue. Make your reservations today at badgeofhonorcruise.com.
26 officers lost their lives while on duty in 2022.
Blue lives matter in America.
Hello, once again, you are listening to the Straight Talk Podcast. I am your host, former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. I hope all of you had a joyous Easter. I know I did. Christ is risen. I think I want to start there with the Catholic Church. You know, it's a Christian holiday, but, you know, mainly Catholic. Other religions do celebrate Easter Sunday, the Easter season. But, and it's more than, you know, Easter eggs and bunny rabbits. You know, that's the commercialization of Easter, which I'm okay with. I don't get all bent out of shape over that, but it's really about Christ having risen from the dead to save all of mankind. He was sent here to die for us, for our sins. And so there's a, you know, there's an aspect of the thing I'm going to talk about next with the Catholic Church. By the way, I am Catholic. And I only mention that because I don't want anybody to think that I'm talking out of turn, you know, speaking, criticizing another religion other than my own. I'm Catholic. And I believe in the philosophy, and I do this on the, you know, the race issue as well, that we cannot and should not be afraid to self-criticize. So I have some criticism of the Catholic Church and what I'm going to talk about in a moment. And I'm going to make the case as to why. So I come across this story, and this is why, you know, I like to poke around. I like to sift through news feeds and, you know, not just the breaking news, but I'll go to sites that feature journal articles, you know, well-written, to learn what the heck is going on. Nobody in this political environment can know everything that's going on. That's not the goal. But I like to find things that you're not going to see in the breaking news section and talked about by the major networks and the major media sites. So I come across a story, and this is from crisismagazine.com. And it says, is the church, talking about the Catholic Church, enabling criminality and facilitating the oppression of immigrants as that they are hoping to help? So I'm going to read some excerpts from the story. It's a lengthy article. It's about 10 pages, 8, 9, 10 pages. But I'm going to read some excerpts, and then I'm going to hit, you know, talk more directly about it from my own perspective. It says, over the last 2.5 years, over 7 million illegal immigrants have entered the United States. That number does not include those who escaped detection and are not in any official counts. By the end of 2024, it is projected that well over 10% of the population will be here illegally. The result of President Biden's decision not to enforce border laws and the massive illegal immigrant flow takes various forms. Challenges include drug and human trafficking, child abuse, sexual exploitation, indentured servitude, and other labor crimes, environmental crimes, gang violence, assorted welfare frauds, national security concerns, money laundering, homelessness and a squalor on the streets of American cities and towns, and the corrosive effect of flaunting the rule of law. Goes on to say here, the net, and this is what caught my attention, by the way, as I'm reading this article. The net dollar cost of illegal immigration to the American taxpayer is at least $151 billion a year. Most expenditures at the federal, state, and local level involve housing, education, health care, and increased expenditures on law enforcement and related services. Let me repeat that figure. The net dollar cost of illegal immigration to the American taxpayer is at least $151 billion a year. So the article asks, who stands to benefit? It always comes back to money. The overwhelming majority are economic migrants. They are mostly young males searching for a better life. They come to the United States to make money, both legally and illegally. Most are extremely poor and quasi-illiterate. Few speak English. Some are infected with serious communicable diseases. By the way, we're seeing measles outbreaks throughout the United States, something that this country's had under control for the last, 40 or 50 years. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing cities like Chicago and some of these other sanctuary cities that have had a huge influx of illegal immigrants or migrants or illegal aliens into their cities. And now they're seeing measles epidemic, measles outbreaks. So it says here, unfortunately, with the open border policies in place, we really don't know who they are. There are no meaningful background checks. You've heard me talk about that before. Worldwide in 2022, migrant workers sent almost 800 billion back to their home countries. The United States is the largest source country for world remittances, especially for Latin America and Caribbean countries. It goes on to say here, let's examine the role of the American Catholic Church in facilitating the immigration crisis. Now we're going to get into the meat of this. The role of the Catholic Church. Corporal acts of mercy necessitate that we feed the hungry, give drink to the thirsty, shelter the homeless, and clothe the naked. Our compassion dictates that we assist strangers to our homeland. When it comes to illegal immigration, is our empathy misplaced? Is the church enabling the above criminality and facilitating the oppression of the immigrants we are hoping to help? I should say they are hoping to help. Are leftists and naive do-gooders in the church participating in the transformation of the United States that by far the overwhelming majority of all Americans, particularly Catholics, do not want? Decades ago, the State Department began to resettle genuine refugees in the United States. They approached the Catholic Church for help. Today, that legitimate assistance has turned into an illegal immigration complex worth billions of dollars. Pope Francis, a leftist globalist Argentine, has made the defense of illegal immigration a major plank of his papacy. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops is all in. Post-COVID, weekly mass attendance has continued its steep decline. There's a need to fill both the pews and the collection plates. Is that what this is? Is it really about helping the poor, the less fortunate, and clothing the naked? Or is it like this story said, there's a need to fill both pews and the collection plates? Catholic organizations are among the top recipients of federal immigration funds. Between 2008 and 2022, Catholic charitable organizations received approximately $3 billion in federal funding. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops acts as a kind of general contractor. It is the single largest grantee of subawards in the nation. For example, Catholic Charities, remember that group, Catholic Charities, receives direct funding from the United States government, but also sub-awards from the Conference of Catholic Bishops. According to Forbes magazine, in 2022, Catholic Charities USA was the 13th largest U.S. charity. Of the $4.7 billion in total revenues, Catholic Charities received $1.4 billion from government support. In short, the globalist left and Biden administration are hiding behind faith-based organizations to keep federal grants flowing to assist illegal immigration and to deflect from the horrific criminal results. Meanwhile, it is clear many bishop charities benefit financially from their participation and promotion of illegal immigration. The Catholic Church. The article ends by saying, shouldn't Catholic charitable organizations devote themselves to the problem of poverty, lack of education, inequality, unemployment, and poor health care in the illegal immigrants' country of origins? In other words, go and set up missionaries in these other countries instead of facilitating a gateway here in the United States. Instead of helping criminals break U.S. law and transform our country, it appears once again it all comes back to the money. Okay. So what do I think about this besides the obvious? First of all, I had no idea. None. And I bet you didn't either. Now, I have nothing against when I attend church on Sundays, throwing a few shekels into the collection plate as it comes by, you know, to help the poor and help the church. Tithes, as they say in some other religions. And the Bible talks about that. I have no problem with that. But knowing what I know now from reading this story, I have a big problem. Because I didn't know that some, if not all, of my money, let's go with some, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, that some of it is going to facilitate this illegal immigration. First of all, where are the separation of church and state people? I know that's not part of the Constitution, but you like to hear the left talk about that. Separation of church and state. Where are they? They're giving billions of dollars to the United States government to a religious organization? Seriously? So, I get this letter, ironically, last week. It's dated March 18th, 2024, from Catholic Charities. Now, I've heard of Catholic Charities before, and they always have this fund drive during the course of the year. It's a real strong push for collections for this charitable organization in the Catholic Church. I want to read from this letter. I mean, as soon as I saw this, I knew what it was. I saw the envelope. I go, oh, here's the drive again. But now I'm armed with this information this year. This, dear David, we understand how easy it is to feel overwhelmed with the needs of the world as they are. When we can do a good deed or support a good cause, we feel better because we know we've helped another person along their journey. We are more hopeful. You can help to provide compassionate human services with dignity and respect for families and individuals who are most in need of our care by becoming a supporter of Catholic Charities. Working together for the common good, we help people of any faith. Times of despair, Catholic Charities is the lighthouse in the storm to help guide and navigate through difficult waters. Without you, it would not be possible for Catholic Charities to be present in our local communities like West Bend. These are all Wisconsin communities. Fond du Lac, Sheboygan, Brown Deer, Beaver Dam, Racine, Kenosha, blah, 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 on and on and on. And Milwaukee. With your help, we're able to uplift neighbors whose outlook has dimmed from ongoing poverty and crisis. We are often their last hope. You notice anything peculiar about what I'm reading in terms of who they're helping? It says, I invite you to learn more about Catholic Charities through the featured stories in the back of this newsletter. And I have all the, you know, the old seniors and the kids and all that stuff, you know. Stuff that's supposed to be a tearjerker. The stories detail a person's life and how, with our help, they overcame incredible challenges. There's Jack, who sustained a life-threatening injury. They needed help to remain in his home. And it goes on and describes some of the people that they've helped. David, please join us in creating more hope and healing within your community. Your gift to the 2024 Works of Charity Funds carries with it the undeniable potential to make lives better. It can ease the heavy burden of poverty, lessen times of crisis, give warning to self-confidence, gives wings, I'm sorry, to self-confidence so that we can all move forward together. Sincerely, and it's got the guy's name here, it's the Chief Operating Officer. P.S. Your trust in our mission will make a difference for neighbors in need. Listen to this, folks. Catholic Charities meets highest standards. Highest standards. And at the bottom, you know, the little pledge card, you know, $100, $50, so on and so forth. Was there any mention in this letter that we assist in the illegal immigration operation here in the United States? Is there anywhere in this letter that says that's where your money's going? Is there anywhere in this letter that talks about how Catholic Charities received $1.4 billion from the federal government? And so I have to ask, why are they asking me for money? They're getting money from the federal government. Let me read this part again, going back to this story in Crisis Magazine. Between 2008 and 2022, Catholic charitable organizations received approximately $3 billion in federal funding. Conference of Catholic Bishops acts as a kind of general contractor. For example, Catholic Charities, it's from a letter I just got, fundraising letter, receives direct funding from the United States government, but also sub-awards from the Conference of Catholic Bishops. In 2022, Catholic Charities USA was the 13th largest U.S. charity of $4.7 billion in total revenues. Catholic Charities received about $1.4 billion from government support. Then why are they coming to me? I'm not rich. You know, this is a disguise, and I don't like it. You come with this, you know, oh, we want to help the others. You know, the Bible said, yeah, I know what the Bible says. It doesn't say assist in illegal immigration and facilitate it. It doesn't say take the $1.4 billion or whatever they're receiving and fund illegal immigration with it. Why don't they use that money to help the poor here in the United States? I'm talking about American citizens of any faith. Like they said, we help anybody of any faith. So this letter, you know, it goes out to everybody who's on their list, and that's just about every member. Because all the churches have the vital information of their members. Some of these people can't afford. Some of these people are struggling right now to make ends meet with inflation and the cost of fuel. And you have this Catholic Charities who are getting billions of dollars from the United States government to fund illegal immigration operations. This illegal immigration, as you know, is part of the reason why we have the sex trafficking and the fentanyl. The Catholic Church is funding that. And you know what their goal is? I mean, we're finding it out now when it says follow the money. You know, the churches are empty. They're having a hard time filling the pews in church. And their collections are down. So that's what their motive is. But I think it's shady. I really do. Don't come to me. You know, I was tempted to write a letter to this and send it back with this pledge card, giving nothing. But I was tempted to ask him about this stuff and send a copy of this story so that they can't go into their spin and deny it. And I was going to say, instead of asking me for money and all your parishioners, the Catholic Church does not have a lot of wealthy members. They just don't. So like I said, you know, I don't mind giving money to support and help the poor, the less fortunate, but not illegal immigration. And they're hiding it. Nobody knows this. Not in the Catholic Church, but I don't think in any faith knows this is going on. But instead, I just ripped it up. Matter of fact, folks, I had to go back in the garbage when I saw this article. I had to go back in the garbage to pull this letter back out, and it's ripped up, you know, three. I just rip it in half, and I rip it again. And I'm holding it here, and it's taped together so I could read from it. You know, I got it, and I just said, not a heck with this. And I thought, well, maybe I should send a letter with, you know, with a copy of this story here and ask them to please explain this to me. Why are you hitting me up for cash when your coffers are being filled in the billions of dollars for the federal government to help illegal aliens and to participate in the structure of illegal immigration into the United States? Why? Explain it to me. And then I just thought, wow, David, just throw it away. So I did. But I wanted to share that with you. I thought it was interesting in this Easter season. All right, let's move on here. Another rhino pops up, threatening to leave the GOP over Donald Trump. You know, these people, they're not very smart. They're not very bright people. These politicians I'm talking about, specifically the GOP. But there aren't any smart Democrat ones. They're crafty. They connive, but they're not smart people either. But they can outsmart the Republicans. Because that's not hard to do. So there's this long list of establishment, many of them rhinos, most of them rhinos, but establishment members of the Republican Party who are trashing Donald Trump for having the nerve to win the nomination once again, third time, by the way, to run for president of the United States. Chris Christie at Cheeseburger Eating so-and-so got into the race, entered the Republican primary for president, said his goal was to stop Donald Trump. He didn't have a vision. He didn't say, I'm running because I want to make this country, put it back together, make it a better place, help, blah, blah, blah. No, he says, I'm here to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. You've heard me talk about that on this podcast. It's not his job. That's the voters' job. We get to decide. And boy, does that bother the hell out of these establishment Republicans, because they turn their nose up at us. They look down on us. These establishment rhinos, these elitists, they look down on us voters at the grassroots level, the conservative grassroots level, who vote Republican. You know, they seem to forget many of these followers of Donald Trump, supporters of Donald Trump, and not members of the Republican Party. A lot of Donald Trump's supporters right now, they weren't even involved in the electoral process. They bailed out. They gave up. Remember the forgotten man that Donald Trump went after in the 2016 election? The forgotten man, people who had just stopped voting in frustration, gave up, and he brought him back in the fold. So you have Chris Christie, you have Mike Pence, you have Nikki Haley, you know, and by the way, those three that I just mentioned, there's some others, but those three all stood up there on that stage in the first debate, Republican primary debate, and raised their hands and said, would you support, who here will support the, do you pledge, I should say, to support the eventual nominee of the Republican Party? And they all raised their hands, every last one of them. Pledge your word, honor, integrity, character. They said they would. And then as each one of them fell out of the race, they all took it back. What a charade that was. These people, they have no character. They have no integrity. You take a vow, keep your word. But all this is different because it's Donald Trump. And here's another thing that they forget. The people that I mentioned. Here's another thing. Donald Trump didn't make himself the Republican nominee for president of the United States. The voters did. The voters. We decided this is who we want. And I don't give a damn what they think about our choice. They always tell us, get on board. Shut up and get on board. When their guy or their woman wins. You're like Mitt Romney. Like Bob Dole. And like John McCain. So we just had to hold our nose. Many of us. Like I said, a lot of Donald Trump supporters right now, they weren't even involved 8 years ago. They weren't involved. They gave up, bailed out. So when they're going after Trump, they're mainly slapping at you. The nerve of you to vote for Donald Trump in these primaries. The nerve of you, they're saying. Yeah, the nerve of us. Donald Trump has a following that the others didn't have. It's that simple. And mainly the reason that they don't have a following is because they didn't present a vision for America. All they talked about was why we can't have Donald Trump representing this party's nominee in the presidential sweepstakes coming up in November. That's all they talked about. Donald Trump this. He's not worthy. Our party's better than this. That's elitism. But the great damage that they're doing to this party, and I'm not a member of the Republican Party, by the way. I've said that before. I'm a conservative. I've never belonged to a political party. Never. And probably never will. That's my choice. But what they're not taking into account, I said, the great damage they're doing to this party. Because you know what? Win, lose, or draw. This is Donald Trump's last go-around. November. If he wins, great. You know, hoping that and praying. But even if he loses, the era of Trump will be over. I mean, let's be honest. You know, for some of you to think, well, he could run again in 2028. You know, stop it. But you know who else is going to be gone after 2024 if Donald Trump win, lose, or draw? The voters who don't belong to the Republican Party who could care less. Who like Donald Trump, who love Donald Trump, and would walk over hot coals for Donald Trump to vote for him. They're gone too. Because you know what their attitude is going to be? They weren't involved in this in 2016, but Donald Trump brought him back into the fold. So give me a chance. and he lived up to his word when he became president. They're gone, ladies and gentlemen. And it's going to be a significant drop-off of Republican voters because they're going to go back to not caring anymore. And you know why? Because of the way these elitists treat them, the voters, treat us, and treat our candidate. We will not soon forget this, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you right now, many, I'm not saying what I'm going to do after 2024, but there are many of them that are just going to say to hell with it. You guys treated us like crap. You treated our candidate like crap. You fought against our choice. We're done with you. I mean, who was that guy, the former governor of Mississippi? I can't remember his name. Who talked about the Republican Party needs to be the big tent party. We need to be the big tent, he said. We need to get as many people into this tent as we can. That's not what Chris Christie and Mike Pence and Nikki Haley and anybody else, because there's some other noteworthy politicians, that's not what they're saying. We need to be the big tent party. No, they're saying, no, we want establishment people. We want to decide. This handful, this cabal, this small handful of people want to decide who's going to be the nominee, who's going to be the primary representative, who's going to be this, 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 and this. That's what it means to be an establishment person. So the latest now is Lisa Murkowski. She's a Republican rhino. She's a rhino extraordinaire. She always has been. And she's still fuming because in her last run for Senate in Alaska, Trump backed her opponent. She's still fuming. So now last week, this is from CNN, Lisa Murkowski says she's done with Donald Trump and she won't rule out leaving the GOP. First of all, Lisa, don't threaten us. Just leave. We won't miss you. We'll be better off without you. It goes back to my theory of getting the wrong people off the bus. You've heard me say that. I love that phrase. Getting the wrong people out off the bus, the right people on the bus, the right people in the right seats, and then you move the bus. So Lisa Murkowski, I wish she would just go. You know, do like Liz Cheney and just go. He's another one. Treats the grassroots conservative voter, you know, with disdain and disgust. So it says here, Lisa Murkowski, aghast at Donald Trump's candidacy and the direction of her party, won't rule out bolting from the GOP. Aghast at Donald Trump's candidacy. That's a slap in the face to us because Donald Trump didn't make himself the nominee. He didn't anoint himself. He didn't appoint himself the nominee. The voters did. The veteran Alaska Republican, one of seven Republicans who voted to convict Trump in his second impeachment trial amid the aftermath of January 6th, is done with the former president and said she absolutely would not vote for him. Listen to this stuff. Here's a quote from her. I wish that as Republicans, we had a nominee that I could get behind, she told CNN. She's talking to CNN. I certainly can't get behind Donald Trump, which I don't care. The party shift toward Trump has caused Murkowski to consider her future with the GOP. In the interview, she said she would not say if she would remain a Republican. Asked if she would become an independent, Murkowski said, oh, I think I'm very independent. Yeah, she's a rhino. I just regret that our party is seemingly becoming a party of Donald Trump. She regrets the base voter, you and I. This isn't just an attack on Donald Trump. But they use him as a reason or as a guise to slap us grassroots, you know, knuckle-dragging voters down. Because that's how they see us. The voters get to decide who represents them. That's the hallmark of this whole republic. We the people decide. And your person doesn't always win. And when it does, you know what? You need to take some time to get over it and realize that there's something bigger than you and there's something bigger than your candidate. There's something here bigger than Donald Trump because, like I said, this is last go-round. So they'll be done with Donald Trump. Even if he wins, they got 4 years and then they're done with him. But the damage, like I said, they're doing to this party is, to me, it just blows my mind, ladies and gentlemen. Because they don't realize that and nobody asks them that. What about the long-term effect of this hate toward your voter base? And then, you know, here, Murkowski, she also found herself at odds with Senator John McCain's running mate, then-Governor Sarah Palin. See what I mean? This is amazing. So I had Lisa Murkowski, and then there are some other GOPers mainly in the Senate, but some in the House who said they're not voting for Donald Trump. These are establishment rhinos. For heaven's sakes, that's all they are. Go, just Lisa, be gone. And as my mom used to say to me, when you're happy to see somebody leave, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Turning the page, let's go back to the Middle East as the war continues. Israeli government. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the verge of victory in eliminating Hamas. So, we have some more anti-Semitic politicians and people and news sites criticizing Benjamin Netanyahu and his policies and his decisions. So, what's her name? I should speak with more respect for her. If I had any, I would. Vice President Kamala Harris. These people are, you know, they continue their crusade. Looking for my stories here, I found it. Continuing their crusade of their politically inspired attacks on Israel. And I say politically inspired because this is all about one thing, turning on Israel, stabbing them in the back. Losing the Muslim vote, mainly in Michigan, swing state, critical swing state, and potentially Minnesota with their Somali population. Those people are not happy. Muslim communities, Muslim voters, threatening to withhold their vote from Joe Biden. They supported him in 2020. They don't think that Biden has gone far enough to force a ceasefire, to force Israel into doing something that would not be in its best interest. Matter of fact, in the primary in Michigan, a significant amount of people voted uncommitted. And they're worried about that because, you know, Biden and the Democrats have a razor-thin margin for error. If, you know, blacks peel off in the projected numbers, if Hispanics peel off, if Muslims peel off, Joe Biden doesn't have a chance. So anyway, and the latest here, first of all, the last, as you probably heard, well, I'm just kind of keep you up to speed here. The last proposal to Benjamin Netanyahu in Israel to force a ceasefire was rejected out of hand by Prime Minister Netanyahu, and good for him. Rejected out of hand. Rejected Biden. Rejected Blinken's offer of a ceasefire. In return, to get their hostages back, which you've heard me in the last podcast talk about. No, you cannot do that. You can't allow Hamas or anybody to use illegally held hostages as leverage. Go back and listen to the last podcast. I talked about how that's a violation. I think it's Section 96 of the Geneva Convention. So anyway, Vice President Harris was on this week, ABC Sunday show last week. Not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before. And it says, and I read this thing and I said, this is so wrong on so many fronts with what she said. It says, VP Harris doesn't rule out consequences for Israel if it goes ahead with Rafah operation. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris appears to not rule out consequences for Israel if it moves forward with a major ground offensive in the southern Gaza city of Rafah, where over a million Palestinians are sheltering. Upon first being pressed on ABC's This Week whether there would be consequences from the U.S. if Israel moves into Rafah, Harris responds, quote, we're going to take it one step at a time. But after the question was raised a second time, she said, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. This is the meat of what I want to talk about here with this issue, with this column, her appearance on This Week. Quote, when she was pressed a second time, quote, I am ruling out nothing. Quote, we have been clear in multiple conversations and in every way that any major military operations in Rafah would be a huge mistake, close quote, Harris explained. I have studied the maps. First of all, she hasn't studied crap. Because if you quizzed her on, because this goes back a very long time. I did some research. You know, I've been to Israel twice, but I've done some independent research on this Middle East conflict, and it goes back a very long time. She doesn't know half of it. I bet if you ask her about the Khartoum conference hell, where the Arabs said the three no's, no recognition of Israel, no negotiation with Israel, and, you know, no Israeli state. The Arab nations that participated in the Khartoum conference, it was a group of Arab states, made it clear. There's not going to be any two-state solution here. Way back then, they said it. I think that was after the Six-Day War, by the way. So that would have been, what, mid-60s, 66, 67, I think, the Six-Day War. And one of the briefings I got when I was in Israel, and one of the times was by military people who understand the nature of this conflict, that it goes back decades, if not hundreds of years. And, you know, when you understand it from their perspective, it's easier to support them. That's how I gain, you know, that's how they gain my support. When I went over there and saw for myself and I talked to people on the ground, I talked to political leaders in Israel, military commanders, soldiers, law enforcement. She doesn't know. I've studied the maps. No, she hasn't. Because all you got to do is quiz her on a couple of these things that have been going on for the last 100 years, which all lead up to this present conflict, by the way. She'd look at you like you have two heads. She wouldn't know what the hell you're talking about. I've studied the maps. What is that supposed to mean? So she goes on to say, there's nowhere for those folks to go. We're looking at about 1.5 million people in Rafah who are there because they were told to go there. So we've been very clear that it would be a mistake to move into Rafah with any type of military operation, the vice president adds. Okay, two aspects to that. Two. Why has Jordan and why has Egypt sealed off their border? Because they don't want Palestinians in their country. That's where the people of Rafah should go. Into Egypt. Into Jordan. But those two Arab countries, ladies and gentlemen, brother Arabs, they wouldn't want anything to do with the Palestinian people. Nothing. And it's supposed to be Israel's fault? Why isn't the VP and why isn't Biden pressing? Why are they not pressing Egypt and Jordan, open your damn borders so that these refugees who speak your language and are of the same religion and culture, so they have some place to go so that Israel can finish this and then, you know, we can end this war. Why are they not pressing Egypt? You know, all the pressing is being done against Israel. Why? That's who Biden and Blinken and anybody else, that's who they should be meeting with, not yet Netanyahu. They should be meeting with Egypt and Jordan and tell them, man, you guys got to open your borders. Come on, these are your brother Arabs, man. Don't you care? I thought, what about the brotherhood? But those countries, no, we don't want those people here. You remember there was this suggestion made that the United States should take some of these refugees in? Are you kidding me? I said at the time that it's stupid. Tell Egypt to take them. You don't have the language barrier. You don't have the cultural barrier for those people to deal with. You don't have to move them halfway across the world to some foreign land. And I question this whole Biden policy. So that's one aspect. All right, why then go to Egypt or Jordan? Here's the other aspect. Why did Harris say, I'm ruling out nothing in terms of consequences for? What does she mean, I'm ruling out nothing? She's not the frickin' president. She doesn't set Mideast policy. The president does. She's speaking out of turn. Nobody gives a damn what Kamala Harris thinks about this Mideast situation. Now, if Blinken, under the permission of Biden, wants to speak on some of this stuff, okay, you know, he's speaking. He's a foreign policy guy. He's not an expert, by the way, but he's a foreign policy guy, not the vice president. Who the hell cares what Kamala Harris thinks about this? And Biden should be pissed that she said that because she backed him into a corner. I'm not ruling out anything here. I'm ruling out nothing, she said. That's a quote. You're not the president. Nobody cares what you think. You know how you answer these questions? You know how you talk when you're working for the president of the United States? We only care what Biden thinks. Here's how she should have answered it. You know, I've talked to the president, and the president is not ruling out anything. The president. She can speak for the president. But I don't care what she thinks. I'm not ruling out anything, she said. I'm ruling out nothing. I don't give a damn what you think or what you're ruling out. What does Biden think? And when you're Blinken, you're supposed to answer those things the same way. You want to ask him a question, Blinken? We're not asking what he thinks. And Blinken and Harris and anybody speaking for the president should know that. They only care what you're speaking on behalf of. What does the president think is what they're basically saying. And here's how you start that answer every time. The president has made it clear. She goes, we have made it clear. No, the president has made it clear. The president sets foreign Mideast policy. And every time you ask, well, the president does, the president made it clear. you know, I've spoken to the president, and the president has said, and the president this, and the president, the president, the president, the president, with all of your answers, because we only care what Biden thinks. And when I say we only care, because he gets to set Mitty's policy. We could disagree with it, you know, on our side, but we still, we don't care what Kamala Harris thinks. I've studied the maps. What maps? You know, I used to, it reminds me when I was the sitting sheriff, I made it clear with my upper command staff, because I would send them out there sometimes to talk to the media about something the media wanted to know. You know, the media would send a question or, hey, we want to talk about this. We want to ask the sheriff some questions. And most of the times I did it. But sometimes I'd pick a top commander, here, go out here and emphasize, you know, this, and this. You know, these, and I better have heard it, and if not, I'd call them in and remind them. You know, you get asked a question, well, what about this rash of, you know, car break-ins over here? Well, you know, the sheriff has made it clear that we're going to blah, blah, blah. The sheriff, not as a top commander. Well, I think nobody cares what he thinks or she thinks. They only care what the sheriff thinks. I'm the elected representative. They are not. And I used to say this all the time to my public information officer, who spoke a lot with the media, dealt with the media a lot. I said, when people see your lips move, they better hear my voice coming out of it. And what I meant by that is, you know, she got asked a question. Well, you know, the sheriff has spoken on this before, or the sheriff has emphasized this. The sheriff, not I and not we. No, the sheriff. So when I read this with Harris, I said, are you kidding me? Is she setting Mideast policy now? She's not taking anything off the table in terms of consequences for Israel? You got to be kidding me. You have got to be kidding me. Anyway, that's it for today, folks. Enjoy your week.
When you talk about race, crime, and politics, some folks lose sleep over this, but not me, because I sleep just fine on my Giza Dream Sheets and Pillow from MyPillow, especially this new 2.0. If you haven't gotten yours yet, you are missing out. Just go to MyPillow.com and use promo code Clark, that's C-L-A-R-K-E, and save up to 66% off. The direct link is also available on my website, AmericaSheriff.com. Get a great night's sleep so we can continue the fight. Friends, I want to thank you for listening to today's episode of Straight Talk with yours truly, America's Sheriff David Clark. And a special thank you also goes out to our sponsors. My goal, as always, is to break down these complex and many times controversial issues and bring it to you straight with a little dose of common sense, no media bias, no talking points, just truth. And this podcast would not be possible without your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you did, please leave a review at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite place to listen. And please share this message of common sense on social media. For more content, be sure to follow me on Truth Social, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. This podcast is brought to you by AmericaSheriff.com with executive producer Judy Wilkinson of JL Wilkinson Consulting and producer Josh Wentz in partnership with our friends at Bulldog Media. If you are interested in partnering with Straight Talk Podcasts or having me speak in your area, please contact Judy at jlwilkinsonconsulting@gmail.com. 706-518-2116. That's JL Wilkinson Consulting@gmail.com. Phone number 706-518-2116.